Hey, if you're listening to this, I will assume you're at least interested in money, understanding the economy, and finances as well. And some of us now want to get the next generation interested as well. So check out Million Bazillion, Marketplace's award-winning kids podcast that breaks down money to help dollars make more sense. Tune into Million Bazillion wherever you find your favorite podcasts. A whole new season is out now. Million Bazillion is presented in partnership with Greenlight, the debit card and money app for kids and teens. Greenlight helps kids and teens learn to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest. Get 1 month free and an extra $10 when you sign up for a Greenlight account at greenlight.com/million.
Buying stuff, buying houses, how we feel about people who can buy a lot of stuff and houses. It's all coming up. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace. In Baltimore, I'm Amy Scott, in for Kai Rizdahl. It's Wednesday, February 15th. Good to have you with us. People went shopping again last month. That's the big takeaway from today's retail sales report from the Commerce Department. After falling in November and December of last year, sales rose 3% in January. And that was pretty much across the board. Auto sales, bar and restaurant tabs, furniture, electronics, clothing, all got a boost. Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman has the story.
Inflation and recession worries caused consumers to hold tight to their money in November and December.
They had done most of their holiday shopping in October, front-loaded the holiday season a little bit, and then really pulled back in those 2 months.
That's Kayla Brune at polling firm Morning Consult.
But what happened at the same time was that inflation started to slow. Real incomes actually picked up over that period.
A lot of workers have been getting raises. People on Social Security got a big cost of living increase. So in January, consumers had more money to spend. Retailers, meanwhile, had a lot more stuff to sell because supply chains have mostly cleared up, says Arun Sundaram at CFRA Research.
Retailers, their shelves are fully stocked. They have the products that consumers want,
which they now have to move off their shelves fast.
A lot of retailers have been facing excess inventory issues. We've been seeing discounts and markdowns to try to entice consumers to make these purchases.
Consumers are shifting how and where they spend in response to inflation, says Sundaram. He's doing it himself.
A year, 2 years ago, back then I was definitely shopping more at Whole Foods and also ordering out more. Now I'm cooking more at home, been going to Walmart more.
The U.S. consumer is being whipsawed by rising prices and fears of recession on one side, rising wages and strong job growth on the other. Mark Cohen at Columbia Business School says it's hard to predict how they'll react.
The vagaries of consumer behavior is a black box.
In January, at least, that black box said, what the heck, let's go shopping. I'm Mitchell Hartman for Marketplace.
On Wall Street, traders ended the day in a buying mood. We'll have details when we do the numbers. After a big drop earlier this year, mortgage interest rates have been ticking back up again. The Mortgage Bankers Association said today the average rate for a 30-year fixed-rate mortgage rose to 6.39% last week. But a lot of the people buying homes in this market don't actually need a mortgage. Roughly a third of home sales last year, according to Redfin, were all cash deals. That's the highest share since 2014, when the market was still recovering from the subprime mortgage and foreclosure crisis. Some cash buyers are institutional investors. Some are folks selling in expensive markets, taking the proceeds and buying in more affordable ones. Emmanuel Martinez and a team at the Washington Post dug into the data. Welcome to the program.
Hi, Amy. How's it going?
Great. Thanks for coming on the show. So what is going on? Why are so many people able to buy houses with cash?
The percentage of homes being bought in cash has been increasing since the pandemic, and has only continued to go up. And part of the reason has been due to the pandemic, right? We've seen wealthy people get wealthier, That is part of the reason. Some of it has been this location in Frederick and Montgomery counties in Maryland. We were told that it is people who were living closer to D.C. who wanted more space. And often those places like D.C. tend to be more expensive, and out in the suburbs, like, housing is cheaper. And that was the relationship between what we had heard between these people moving out of D.C. and into Frederick and Montgomery counties. And that has certainly been driving the uptick in homes being bought with cash.
Absolutely. So what does all this mean for people who are trying to get into this market and looking at interest rates that are much higher than they were just a year ago? How do they compete with someone paying cash, or potentially lots of buyers paying cash?
I think that is part of the problem, right? And it's a trend that has continued, that often if you are depending on a mortgage or need help from a bank to finance a home, it becomes another barrier for those people to get into the housing market or to sell and buy a home. Often the people who can buy cash have the leg up because, like, the transaction is done once you pay in cash.
So basically a cash offer is more attractive because it's a sure thing, whereas the financing could potentially fall through when someone needs a mortgage.
Exactly.
You had this really striking quote from Lawrence Yoon, who is the chief economist at the National Association of Realtors. What did he say about, you know, what this means for kind of society as a whole?
Yeah, his when we talked to him, he was talking about, like, the trend increasing and needing cash to buy homes, and that becoming an advantage to get into the housing space. And often people who have the most cash at hand are the wealthiest. And so if it's becoming a requirement to have cash on hand to buy a home, then that's essentially saying or flagging that only the wealthy can buy homes. And his perspective on that was that if only the wealthy are buying homes, something is fundamentally wrong with society. Like, the way to build wealth in this country is often through home ownership. And so then that's going to create this inability for people to build wealth, especially for those who don't already own homes. Like, if they can't get into the housing space, then they're essentially, like, being financially stuck.
What do you see as potential solutions? I mean, is there anything that a person who doesn't have cash can do to, you know, better compete?
I mean, one of the things that the economists I talked to, what they've said is, like, part of the problem is supply. And that is true in many areas. Like, I live in California, which has, you know, like, that's part of California's housing story is the lack of supply, especially in some of the most expensive areas in California, right? Like, that there is no supply for people to buy. That is one aspect. And I think the other thing that is often overlooked is when people sell their homes, they often have the agency to who are they selling it to, right? And so home sellers do have the agency to select who they are ultimately going to sell their home to.
All right. Well, Emmanuel Martinez, thank you so much for joining us. He's a data reporter at The Washington Post and wrote about cash home sales.
Thank you for having me.
As we just heard, the road to home ownership is not always easy. And for those who do need a mortgage, it can be harder to get one once you reach a certain age, especially after 70. That's according to new findings from the Center for Retirement Research at Boston College. Marketplace's Samantha Fields tells us why and what it can mean for seniors.
It's pretty common for people to think about moving when they get older.
That may mean they're moving into a retirement community, or a warmer climate, or they're going from a two-level house to a one-level house.
David Dworkin at the nonprofit National Housing Conference says it's also common for older homeowners to look to refinance to get a better rate.
The question remains is, can they afford the payment every month? And that's what a lender is going to be looking at.
Generally, he says, as people get older, they have less income, often because they've stopped working. Lena Ju at the Urban Institute says that's one of the main reasons older people are more likely to be denied if they try to refinance or get a new mortgage.
The top denial reason for older homeowners are high debt-to-income ratios, lack of collateral or insufficient home equity, as well as deteriorating credit scores.
For lenders, there's also the question of whether it makes sense to give someone in their 70s or 80s a loan that's designed to be paid off over many years. To put it bluntly,
older people have a shorter time to live and may have less resources to pay a mortgage off.
Teresa Ghilarducci at the New School says most people don't know it can be harder to get a mortgage when you're older. She only learned it when doing research for a book.
If I, a PhD in economics and a retirement expert, didn't know it until I actually looked, I'm pretty sure nobody else knows it.
And she says it's important information for people to have in their 50s and 60s so they can plan for retirement. I'm Samantha Fields for Marketplace.
Coming up.
You know, as they say, more money, more problems.
They do say that, but first let's do the numbers. Markets ended up slightly. The Dow Jones Industrial Average rose 38 points, 0.1% to finish at 34,128. The NASDAQ was up 110 points, 0.9% to close at 12,070. And the S&P 500 lifted 11 points, 0.2% to end at 4,147. We talked about the housing market, looking at some housing stocks. Toll Brothers was unchanged. Meritage Homes knocked down 0.1%. Lennar Corporation fell 0.5%. Subway, the quick service sandwich chain, confirmed rumors this week that it is indeed for sale. No timeline for that yet. Some competitors, Wendy's, sized up 1.5%. Restaurant Brands International, they own Burger King and Tim Hortons, cooled down almost 0.8%. Bonds fell. The yield on the 10-year T-note rose to 3.80%. You're listening to Marketplace. This is Marketplace. I'm Amy Scott. Charging up an electric vehicle on the road should soon get a little easier. Today, the White House announced more steps to reach its goal of 500,000 EV charging stations on U.S. highways by the end of the decade. One piece of that plan involves Tesla, which has agreed for the first time to open up 7,500 of its charging stations to non-Tesla vehicles. In return, the company will be eligible for billions of dollars in federal subsidies and possibly much more, Marketplace's Matt Levin reports.
The Great American Road Trip is already electric for Mark Geller.
I'm in San Francisco, so I drove in June to Iowa in my 2013 Tesla.
Geller is spokesperson for the Electric Vehicle Association, basically an EV enthusiast club, not an industry group. He says Tesla's highway charging network is still one of the biggest reasons people buy Teslas.
The smartest decision they made was to build out their own private network to enable long-distance driving.
It's not only that Tesla has the largest charging network, its charging network actually works. Seth Weintraub is the publisher of the EV news site Electrek.
All of the other makers have a very unreliable network.
Partly because other networks have to accommodate so many different types of EVs. So why is Tesla doing this? Well, the billions in federal dollars, but also...
Once you have these stations, you are charging people for every charge. More people coming in, buying your Tesla energy, you're going to make a lot more money.
It's hard to make money from charging stations right now. Home charging is way cheaper and more convenient. But the future could hold additional revenue streams, like using stations to sell electricity back to the grid. And Sam Houston at the Union of Concerned Scientists says road trippers aren't the only market for public charging. There's also...
drivers for transportation network companies of the likes of Lyft, Uber, and even some of the delivery services.
In fact, Tesla was already considering allowing other EVs into their stations before today's announcement from the White House. I'm Matt Levin for Marketplace.
A thing I learned not too long ago, maybe you already knew, is that there is a not small corner of the internet devoted to something called ASMR videos. ASMR stands for Autonomous Sensory Meridian Response, which is the tingly goosebump-like feeling some people experience when they see or hear something satisfying, like pages crinkling in a book. Or the sound of fingernails tapping on a hard surface. Or even, apparently, dirty rugs getting cleaned. People use these videos to relax, study, or fall asleep to, and the millions of views they can rack up are a business opportunity. Here's the next installment of our series, My Economy.
My name is Samad Abdullahi. I live in Accra, Ghana, West Africa. I run a cleaning business that provides services such as rug cleaning, upholstery cleaning, home and offices. We do pressure washing as well. Oh, I think about 2 years ago, I just posted something online. I didn't even know people liked watching rug cleaning videos. It wasn't a very dirty rug. It was just a rug I just vacuumed, shampooed it, and then rinsed it. But the video that went viral after that was the video that I was scraping the soapy water off the rug. That was the video that got everyone's attention. It sounds like waves from the ocean. That first video made about 20,000 views on Instagram. And then I reposted it on YouTube. I got about 100,000 on YouTube. And then other people took the video and were reposting it on their pages. I saw a video, a page get about 4.7 million. There were other pages that got 1 million. That was how viral that video went. Right after that video, I didn't stop. I started posting more scraping videos. And my page was just getting more traffic. Through Instagram, I'm getting a lot of clients that are calling me to come to their homes to do cleaning, pick up their rugs, take it back and clean. And YouTube is also giving me additional revenue through the monetization program where, of course, the more views you get, the more you get paid. Right now, I'm averaging between $900 to $1,000 a month. Let's not forget, I actually run a business, so the business is the main thing. I think it's a bonus to what we're already doing. You know, from YouTube and I think on Instagram, you can check where your viewers are coming from. And it's surprising to see that you're getting viewers from all around the world. You're getting DMs from people who are encouraging you and telling you, I love your videos. It's amazing. I myself have become addicted to my own videos. Sometimes I sit down and spend hours watching my own videos. So I understand why they get that way. I'll just keep doing what I do and just keep posting more satisfying videos so I can get people to be happy and be relaxed and kill off all anxiety and all that.
That was Samad Abdullahi, the pretty lucrative side business in Accra, Ghana. You can tell us about your economy at marketplace.org. Don't you feel relaxed? Pop culture has always had a complicated relationship with wealth, with magazines, movies, and TV shows that both celebrate and mock the wealthy. But lately, it feels like Hollywood's depictions of the rich and maybe societal attitudes towards them have taken a turn. Some standouts over the last few years, the movies Parasite and The Menu and Glass Onion, shows like Succession and The White Lotus, not exactly flattering portrayals. Marketplace's Kristen Schwab looks at what's behind the mood shift.
In the HBO series Succession, Tom and Greg are living on the outskirts of the Roy family, trying to claw their way up the ranks, which includes acting like they belong. There's this one scene from the first season that stands out to TV critic Caroline Framke.
Tom brings Greg to this fancy restaurant and they're eating this bird. I think it's called the ortolan.
What's ortolan?
It is a deep-fried songbird. You eat it whole.
Oh my God.
This is like a rare privilege, and it's also kind of illegal.
It's a rather unique flavor.
You can tell neither of them want to do this, but it's this thing that they're told wealthy people do.
It makes being rich look ridiculous, like it's a whole lot of fussy make-believe. And Framke says this is a big theme in TV and movies right now, finding pleasure in watching wealthy people suffer.
There is a little bit of schadenfreude in watching, you know, people so much richer, so much more quote-unquote successful than you be revealed as frauds or as not being fulfilled or as not being quite satisfied enough with what they have.
These characters are often one-dimensional, oblivious to their privilege, and have questionable morals. Think the Do You Know Who We Are tech bros in the movie The Menu, or Jennifer Coolidge's character in The White Lotus, a woman born into wealth and on a pursuit to find happiness that has dire consequences.
When it comes to watching TV shows and movies about rich people, about vast amounts of wealth, the modes can sort of go between a vicarious escapism or it can be more of a morbid fascination. And I think right now we're more in the latter moment.
And the moment isn't random. Think about the extreme economic events we've been through. There's the pandemic when essential workers kept the country running while the 1% amassed a huge sum of wealth, twice as much as the rest of the world put together, according to the nonprofit Oxfam. And before that was the Great Recession, which is how we got the term 1%. Brooke Harrington, an economic sociologist at Dartmouth, says 2008 was a turning point when being rich suddenly meant something different.
This is a kind of wealth that is the subject of films and of television shows that are popular. It's the dynastic wealth, meaning it's inherited by subsequent generations, and they don't compete in the marketplace like the rest of us.
It's probably not a coincidence that around that time, flashy shows like MTV Cribs were canceled and movies about greed, like The Wolf of Wall Street, became blockbusters. Even Bravo's hit reality series, The Real Housewives, has been focusing less on glitz and glamour and more on the cast's absurdity and financial scams.
It's not always depicted accurately just how lonely, paranoid, and miserable folks are. You know, as they say, more money, more problems.
In that way, we may have not just gotten to a more hate-watching place, but a more accurate one. Jonathan Kuntz is a film historian at UCLA. He says as the middle class shrinks, so has its representation, fading away with sitcoms like The Cosby Show or Everybody Loves Raymond. And so have rags-to-riches storylines like The Pursuit of Happiness. Because in a time when Mark Zuckerberg can lose $30 billion in a day and still rank among the world's richest people, who even cares how wealth is made?
Where once upon a time, we had this American dream that anybody could, you know, succeed and become wealthy if they worked hard enough. I think some folks are kind of disillusioned with that, and they see things more as a crapshoot. Some people got lucky, and the rest of us suffer as a result.
But Kuhn says it doesn't mean we'll live in this cultural moment forever, because storylines ebb and flow with society.
It's hard to say where we're going to go from this kind of eat the rich phase that we're in now, because it's going to depend on what happens to people. I mean, if people are doing well, if the economy is booming, I think there will be less of a critique of the rich.
Right now, it's all Nepo babies and tech tycoons, but there could still be room someday for the American dream. I'm Kristen Schwab for Marketplace.
Thank you.
this final note on the way out today, chalk one up for the job changers. People who switched jobs last year were more likely to stay ahead of inflation than folks who stayed put. The Federal Reserve Bank of Atlanta ran the numbers and found that 49% of workers who changed jobs saw real wage growth, that is, growth above the rate of inflation, compared to just 42% of those of us who stayed in the same job. Younger workers were also more likely to come out ahead than older workers. Overall, just 45% of the workforce saw real wage growth last year, down from 57% before the pandemic. Oh, and speaking of how far a dollar goes these days, if you've been to the store lately and noticed that your bag of chips or bottle of laundry detergent feels a bit lighter, could be shrinkflation. That's when stuff gets smaller, but the price doesn't. We want to hear about your experience. You can share your stories at marketplace.org. Okay, here's your moment of economic context, a little more housing to end the show. Home builders are feeling more optimistic. The industry's trade group said today builder confidence rose 7 points this month to the highest level since last September. We'll get a read on actual building, that is, housing starts and permits, tomorrow. Our media production team includes Brian Allison, Jake Cherry, Drew Jostad, Gary O'Keefe, Jeff Peters, Charlton Thorpe, Juan Carlos Torrado, and Becca Weinman. I'm Amy Scott. We will see you tomorrow. This is APM.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.